show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, it's weather's starting to warm up. Things are starting to get a little bit nicer. And hopefully at some point the baseball from the Royals will follow suit. But we'll get into that in just a few short minutes. But first, introductions. I, of course, am Jeff Hurren. With me, as always, is the man who is always nice, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this? It's a very nice evening. I took a walk before the show with the little one and the dog, and it was very nice, very nice.
It's very Norman Rockwell.
Indeed.
Yeah, yes. It's nice here. I didn't really go outside other than to walk to my car, but I mean, the other day it was nice out too, and took a nice little walk. I always like to listen to like other podcasts. That's where I can catch up on other podcasts. Mm-hmm. So taking a walk, it's really, really nice little way to, you know, unplug from the TV and the computer and just kind of like listen to someone else talk. So
yeah,
I like to do that.
Absolutely. So anyway, we got some Royals to talk about, and I feel like my tone right now may be indicative of the Royals' tone for the season. It's really hard to get excited about this team right now. We've got some things that are kind of, you know, pointing in the right direction that we'll kind of discuss here in a little bit, but as far as the wins and losses, it's pointing in the absolute wrong direction. The Royals currently sit at 5-17. However, some positive note, if you, you know, choose to want to look at those sorts of things, they had their first non-losing series of the year when the 4-game series in Detroit, they were able to tie 2-2. So look at that. They didn't win. They didn't lose. They won 2 out of 3 games, actually, at one point. So
yeah,
that's pretty, you know, pretty nice. And they had their first win and then followed up by their second win. That was actually a non-shutout. So that milestone has been crossed off the list for the year. Winning a game without having to shut out your opponent. That's always a plus right there. But, you know, things are still not going well, unfortunately. And, you know, it feels like, you know, back in the 2011-2012-ish era, you know, where you could just never get everyone or every facet of the game on the same page. You know, like the starting pitching would be on a roll and they'd have a few games in a row where they'd be pitching really well and the bullpen would keep blowing it. The bullpen would do really well, but they'd always be playing from behind because the starting pitching was down. Or the starting pitching and the bullpen were doing really great, but the offense couldn't score. They'd lose a game 1-0 or something, you know? So it's kind of starting to feel like that. You know, they'll have a good offensive game, but then, you know, they'll give up a bunch of runs. Like, you know, you score like against Toronto, you know, last week, they scored 5 runs, not a huge amount of runs scored, but you know, it's a solid amount for a game, but you give up 15.
Yeah.
And you lose, you know, like that's not good. If you score 5 runs in a game, you should have a pretty good chance to win that game, or at least be in a position to win it. And when you lose by 10 runs, that's bad. So, you know, things like that are kind of happening, you know. But then you have, you know, games like they've had earlier in the season where, you know, they'll only give up a couple runs, but they just can't score any themselves, and end up getting taking that L, if you will. But you know, it's, what do they say? It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. Well, but they're already trailing everybody. So
I was about to say, it's a marathon or a sprint, they tripped.
They're only keeping pace with the White Sox and the Reds, and so I don't know.
Speaking of which, they will be starting probably as we're recording this now on Thursday, April 26th. They'll be starting a series with the White Sox, so hopefully a four-game series at home.
Oh, so, it's you know, five games. They had the doubleheader game.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Good call.
The unprecedented five games. You're welcome, everyone.
It's like a playoff series, except it's the absolute reverse.
Yeah.
Opposite of playoff series. Well, reverse opposite would be the same thing, I guess. So just the opposite of a playoff series, where two very terrible teams are playing each other. And
five
whole games. And we get to be in the middle of it all here in Kansas City.
Yay.
How lucky are we? Right?
At least you get five games between these teams out of the way.
That's true. Like,
they're done now.
Yes. Five more games we won't have to see later.
Right.
The Royals are 5-17. The White Sox are 5-16. So technically better. But I don't know that they are that much better. Mm-hmm. And the so, you know, if the Royals are looking to they can't obviously even out their record with just this series, but like, you know, tip the scales a little bit to where it looks a little bit more respectable, you know, winning 3-4, God forbid, five games against a very bad team would go a long way to be like, okay, you know, weather's getting nicer, get some wins under the belt, get that record looking a little less lopsided, and, you know, maybe you can salvage some things for the season. But, you know, if they come out and they go 1-4 in this next five game stretch against the White Sox, and they're 6-21 at the end of it, and they got three games in Boston after that, I mean, things could be looking real bad real quick.
Jeez.
Yeah. And
just thinking of like they could end up 6-24 after that.
That would be nuts, wouldn't
that's
it?
That's pretty bad. That's
like, let's look at, okay.
20% winning percentage.
So we're going to go and we're going to look up 2005. I don't know why I do this to myself.
Oh, my.
We're going to have to do it.
That's a deep dive.
So, isn't it? Because I want to see how they started off that season. Because that was the year, the literal worst season in Royals history. 56-106. That was the year of the 19-game losing streak. Was that the year? No, that wasn't the year. What year did Buddy Bell say the can't get worse, never say it can't get worse thing? It's like 2000.
Well, I don't, you know, I bet it probably was 2005 because they started in 2004 with Peña still.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So I would imagine he probably, I don't remember when he said that exactly, but I bet he probably said it during the big streak.
Okay, let's check this out.
But, I mean, it'd be appropriate if he said it in 2014 and then things actually got worse.
Right.
Which is pretty much what happened, which is why it comes up so often now, because, well,
yes. Okay, so worse. How funny is this? So after 30 games, that team was 7-23. So if the Royals do what we were just saying, not that we're saying that's what's going to happen, but if that were worst case scenario, going 1-4 against the White Sox and getting swept by the Red Sox, they would be 6-24. They would be off to a worse start than the worst season ever in Royals history. So
they probably don't want to do that.
No, they'd like, you know, it would be great to avoid that at all costs.
I know I didn't play at that level, but I think you probably want to win more than 6 out of your first 30.
Man, it's so crazy. Okay. And then because that was from Thursday, July 28th. At that point, they were already 38-64. Ugh. And then went on to not win another game until Saturday, August 20th. So from July 28th to August 20th, they went completely winless.
Wow.
19 games in a row. And, yeah, So they went from 38 and 64 to 38 and 82. Or I guess 38, I guess, because that was the first 38 and 63, sorry, to 38 and 82. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
But hey, then they won four out of their next five. So,
you know, party
watch
time.
Out.
Yuck.
That was gross.
Yeah, hopefully this team doesn't turn out like that one. I think there is more talent on this team, but they sure haven't started very well. So, anything's in range.
Yes. Yes, anything is most certainly in range, unfortunately, in the great realm of possibilities. So, let's try to avoid that, Royals. Let's try to avoid that. Win two games at the very least, so they could be 8-22 is not good by any stretch, but it's better than that 2005 team.
And then they just have to avoid a 19-game losing streak.
Yeah, go 5-17 in that stretch instead of, or I guess that's obviously more than 19 games, but go 4-15 instead of 0-19.
Yeah,
you're already better.
Small victories.
Small victories is absolutely what the Royals are going to be getting right now, because they're not getting any on the field.
Yeah.
So.
Well, they kind of got some this week.
That's true.
A little bit.
Speaking of this week, we had some fun times, because after the Detroit series that the Royals did not lose, the series, I mean, they came back in town for a short interleague series against the Milwaukee Brewers. And, of course, that means our old pal Lorenzo Cain was back in town. He received two standing ovations when he got to the plate for the first time, the first game, and after he hit a home run. I can't imagine too many times that you have a player who in a visiting ballpark gets a standing ovation for hitting a home run against that team. But, crazier things have happened. That just kind of shows how much this town really did love Lorenzo Cain, myself included. And of course, the long awaited Salvi and Lorenzo Cain reunion, too painful for me to look into too much, but it was, from what I did read and see on Twitter and such, it was obviously your typical Sal and Lorenzo Cain shenanigans.
Yeah.
That's fun. It's good. I always love to see when players return like that. Cause you hate to have resentment from fans for players, because they're just doing what's best for them. And we never know the whole situation. Maybe the team didn't want them as much as the fans did, et cetera, et cetera. So you never want to, these people give a lot to the teams that they're from, even if it's not for that long, but which it was for Lorenzo Cain being here for 7 years. So, it's always good when someone can come back like that and then, get that warm reception from fans. And I'm happy and proud that it's part of the Royals fan base that we have done that, with for the last few times that we've had players from this kind of current era that have come back. So that's pretty cool. I thought it was anyway.
Yeah, I think pretty much anytime you have any of those guys returning who were on the two pennant winning teams, they've gotten that kind of response. And, for Kansas City, when you look back at how those 2 years kind of unfolded, and how the city really came alive for it, it's not really that surprising. So, there were a number of people. I wouldn't say it was a lot or even close to the majority, but a lot of people weren't super thrilled with the ovation for Kane's homer. But, I don't know what else you're going to get out of this season other than, moments.
Yeah.
So you might as well, if it's a returning player who was really the best overall player of those teams and just never really got the recognition for it, quite the same with, Perez and with Hosmer and even with Moustakas around and the bullpen. Those guys all overshadow what Lorenzo Cain did when he was, a third place finisher in MVP vote in 2015. So you know, when that guy comes back to town, and it was the same day that Sal Perez returned from the DL. So, I mean, it was like this double reunion, and they both homered on the same day. So, I mean, it was a pretty cool game. Now, the Royals lost, so that sucked. But, I mean, it was a pretty cool moment for all of that. So, I can't really be too upset because, well, one, I didn't expect them to win a whole lot of games anyway. So, it might as well be an experience instead of, you know, worrying and fretting over every single game. You know, you just want to see progress. And, you know, when you get a chance, maybe something special. And that was kind of a special little moment. So, I had no issue with it. I thought the shenanigans were pretty cool. And, there were pictures from Perez's Instagram where Kane had come into the Royals locker room and was visiting with his old teammates. So, you know, I mean, it's special for everyone involved. And I don't think there's any problem with kind of recognizing that. So I thought it was pretty cool. Would have been nice if the Royals could have won. They were kind of in it. They got runners on. Just didn't happen.
They know? Did. Yeah.
So I don't know. But yeah, that's kind of what you got to take away this year is just, hey, was that a cool moment? All right. Is there progress being made from this group of people? Okay. And then you just kind of see where the counting ends at the end of the season. And, you know, hopefully it's more than 56 wins. And, you know, otherwise,
God, I hope so.
You just kind of go with it. I, you know, I've said it before. I have a pretty zen-like approach to this season. I'm just like, I can't be too upset over any losses. I'd rather watch them win, obviously. But, you know, if I can see moments like Sal Perez returning from injury and hitting a homer, which he did the same thing in 2012 when he returned from his meniscus tear, first game back hit a homer, you know, I'm all for that. Like, might as well be something that might be memorable instead of, oh, cool, they beat Milwaukee that one time. Well, all right.
Yeah.
That's fine. But, I mean, a lot of people will remember the day that Lorenzo Cain came back. And then we'll remember it again whenever Eric Hosmer returns, you know, whenever they get a scheduled series with the Padres or what have you. So, you know, I thought it was kind of a cool moment.
Yeah.
You know, the result of the game, not as cool, but, you know,
and that's,
can't go too crazy.
No. And that's kind of the perfect way that you described it to describe that situation in the context of this year where, you know, just looking for moments and looking for things to, you know, point towards the future and, or I guess anything but the present, things that are, that help us remember the recent past that was so awesome, like Lorenzo Cain coming to town, and things that look towards the future where you say, okay, you know, Whit Merrifield is having a really good season, or Jorge Soler is having a really good season. You know, those players that are going to be around for a little while, Danny Duffy gets back on track, et cetera, et cetera. Those things are nice, you know, because those are forward looking. Okay, we can build on this and use those for years to come, and they can benefit the Royals in the future. So, you know, that'll always be nice to have. And that'll be kind of what the season is about, looking towards those things. Because unfortunately, if you're looking at the standings,
yeah,
then you're not going to be, you'll be none too pleased. And, you know, depending on who you are, you may not look at the standings. Like if you're the Royals manager, then Yost, perhaps. Because
yeah, you know.
Said, you know, he said in an interview that he didn't even know his team was 5-17 and that he does not look at standings, which, if I were to give him the bit, I didn't hear the whole conversation or read, you know, I just kind of saw that snippet of a quote.
Yeah, I only saw that line. So
I'll give the benefit of the doubt in saying that I'm guessing the point in context that Ned Yost was trying to make is, hey, I know we're not winning the World Series this year, so the goal of this season is going to be towards, you know, exactly what I was talking about, where you say, okay, what can we improve? What can we do to get better? How can we help get this organization to a point where we can build on it moving forward and get back to where we are competing for a World Series on a yearly basis? You know, that is likely what he was probably trying to get at. But as we know, Ned Yost doesn't necessarily have the best media presence at all times. So sometimes he makes comments like that and they get taken a little bit out of context and they seem weird. And, you know, it does seem weird because it's, you know, I mean, at some point, if you ask me, it's, I mean, if you're truly a manager of a baseball team, not looking at standings, I mean, that's almost irresponsible at that point, because it's your job to know, you know, to win games and know where you stand and all that kind of stuff of a thing. So, you know, I don't mean, I don't know. I thought that was kind of a funny quote. Very Ned. Very Nedly, yeah. Nedly quote.
Yeah, I would say if I had to put money on, I'd say he knows exactly what the record is and just is going to flippantly put it out there to illustrate that he's not concerned about what the record is, which is probably the right way for him to approach it, really. But, it's, you know, when you just put it out there in black and white, it does look pretty silly. Like, why does this guy not know it? I think Royals Review put a tweet out there because there was a when Jake Junis was carrying a no-hitter deep into a game two starts ago or whatever it was, you know, Ned went out there to talk to him because he hit a guy and he walked a guy, and so there was a bit of a jam. And didn't even realize that, like, he had a no-hitter going. And he got back in the dugout. I was like, oh, well, good thing I didn't try to pull him or anything. So, you know, they put those kind of, like, quotes side by side, you know. But I think, you know, more or less Ned kind of knows what he's saying, I would guess. But, I mean, it might be genuine. He might not pay any attention to the standings because it's April 26th and, you know, he knows that they've not won a lot of games, and that's all he really needs to know for right now. You know, wherever they land in the standings really doesn't matter unless they somehow win like 30 in a row. And then, hey, maybe they're fortunate enough to do something, but, you know, that's pretty slim odds. So I don't think he's worried too much about it.
No. And he probably shouldn't be, in fairness. So
no, I guess not.
But In a week full of less than interesting baseball, Ned Yost had a couple interesting quotes because, you know, besides the one that we just talked about, he had another one where from an interview that he did with Rustin Dodd where he mentioned that he was going to or planning to, you know, essentially manage as long as it takes to get this rebuild back on track and the team back on track to where they can compete again and be in a good position to pass on to the next guy, as he said. So, you know, he's basically said that he was willing to wear all the losses this year and possibly next year if that's what it took to get in the to get this team in the place that it needs to be. So that's kind of interesting because, you know, a couple of years ago, after the World Series runs, you know, most conventional wisdom was that Ned Yost was going to retire, if not before the 2016 season, you know, very soon. And that was kind of the plan all along. And he only wanted to see it through. They got the, you know, the World Series. And then it was when he stuck around, it was like, okay, well, until this kind of core disbands, then he'll retire again. Everyone thought that was the big announcement that was going to happen this offseason, you know, us included, I think, but it just never came. Even after his hunting accident, yeah. And he's back in the saddle and apparently plans to be for a couple of years. So I don't know what the deal is. I don't know if David Glass gave him an ownership stake, if he just said, wear all these losses so I don't have to worry about firing another manager in a couple of years. Right. And then, you know, we'll hire some new guy once the team is in a better position. I don't know. I mean, stranger things have happened, but I just thought that was kind of interesting because, you know, the whispers for 4 or 5 years now have been that Ned was going to retire somewhat soon. But, you know, now here we are with possibly not only looking at this season, but, you know, another season or two of Ned Yost. And especially when you think about, you know, there's going to be a lot of unhappy fans this year, especially if they're 2005 levels of bad. So are they going, you know, how okay is the fan base going to be with Ned Yost coming back, you know, next year or the year after that if they go, you know, if they win 60 games this year? I don't know. So that was kind of an interesting little tidbit as far as what Ned's plans are for how he's gonna roll with this team going forward.
Yeah, I don't know how many discussions we've had through email chains and or the BP Kansas City Slack about who might be the next manager. Because we've ever since 2015, you kind of figured it was going to be coming up soon. And, you know, it's gone from like Jason Kendall to Raul Ibanez to Pedro Grifol to an outside hire. And maybe it does turn out that it's still Ned Yost. I mean, I don't know. I think almost it kind of makes a little sense from the Royal side. Because when they brought in Ned Yost in the first place back before the 2010 season, he was kind of this, you know, former manager, obviously, with the Brewers, but he had also spent so much time with them as they were developing players and coming up. And the Royals wanted him in a similar type of role as a consultant, special assistant kind of deal. And then when Trey Hillman got fired in May of 2010, he took over and he's been there since. So, you know, I think they put him in that position to really be the steward for everybody coming up. And they're kind of getting to a position where they're almost in that same kind of spot. You know, because, I mean, when you look at the guys, you know, for every Hunter Dozier and Ryan O'Hearn and Bubba Starling and whatever, those are probably not likely the guys who come up who are on the next Royals playoff team. The next guys are the Khalil Lees, the Sully Matias, the Foster Griffins out there. The guys who are 19, 20, 22 years old, you know, and they're still a couple years away from the big league. So if that means that Ned is their first manager for a couple of years and then that's when he walks off, maybe that's what the Royals are looking for. You know, someone who can really break in those young players their first couple of seasons. And then when they're ready to take the next step, maybe that's when they have someone groomed to step up and go from there. Because I always thought, I remember I was a lot of times in like 2012 and 2013, and especially even like early 2014, if people would ask, you know, I would always feel like Ned Yost was the guy who would get these guys ready to be a playoff threat, but not necessarily the guy who would get them through there. And it just happened that, you know, he did it. So,
right. And not only you, but other people thought the same thing about Dayton Moore as well. You know, that they were both kind of more bridge GM and managers than they would be the ones to actually get you there. But yet here we are.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think if that's their approach and Ned is someone that the Glass family trusts and that Dayton trusts, and, you know, that's going to keep them there for a while. And if that's the case, then, you know, maybe we'll see three or four more years of him. He's not, you know, he's not that old, and he's also kind of like, you know, Iron Man. The guy, I mean, yeah. I remember a few years ago, I think it was before 2013 or something, he had his gallbladder out in the morning and then was back managing an intra-squad game that afternoon. It was like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
And now he's, you know, falls out of a tree stand.
Dedication.
Nearly dies from the blood loss and the injury and wasn't supposed to be able to even, like, walk regularly for months and months. And, you know, he just as spry as ever in spring training as early as February. So, I mean, you know, he's been around the game a long time. He's a tough guy. He's just going to kind of go out and do it. So, you know, if that's the kind of stance that the Royals are looking at, I guess I see why that makes sense. And if he wants to continue to do it, you know, then he'll probably get that opportunity. So, I mean, the way it's been phrased is he's got the job as long as he wants it. And that's probably the same thing for Dayton Moore, really, unless things take a really, really sharp turn, you know. If they draft poorly this year and in 3 years nothing's really working out, yeah, then maybe there's a change on both levels. But, I mean, for right now, the Royals seem like they're ready to go into process part two with a lot of the same architects, you know, in place, you know, that got them there the first time. So, if the Royals trust him, I guess that makes sense from their point of view. Maybe it's not the right decision. Maybe you want to go to someone like Pedro Grifol, who's a little more statistically oriented, has been around a lot, has worked with a lot of pitchers, a lot of catchers. Maybe you want to go with Ibañez, who seems to have this really good like interpersonal thing working for him. But I don't know. I mean, it might just be somebody completely different, like Jason Kendall, who's going to be a tougher manager, you know, kind of in the Tony Muser fold.
Yay.
Or anybody else. Yeah. There's a fun story. I'm reading a book written by Jeff Montgomery. It's If These Walls Could Talk. One of the anecdotes of Tony Muser is that there was over the All-Star break and a bunch of the Royal Lancers had loaded up golf clubs. And so Muser was talking at like an All-Star break press conference or something and saw all of their golf bags along a wall and thought that they were players' bags. And so he's like, well, I'll tell you one thing, no more golfing for any of these guys, you know. And so comes back later and in the clubhouse, I think it was, I forget the player. I can't think of it right now. But they had a sponsorship with like Mizuno. And so they gave him this custom golf set and a golf bag. And so the players come in later, they come back and they're like, if anybody had your golf bag shipped here, they're in the dumpster. It's like,
oh, geez.
Okay. And they ended up, I think there was, you know, some discussion with the upper levels of the front office and the guy got his golf clubs back. But that's kind of what Tony Muser was. And that's how I would think Jason Kendall would be. But I don't know. I mean, Ned Yost kind of fits all of those except the stat profile. So maybe that's what the Royals are looking to do. They just want to keep the guy that they know and kind of fit around later and groom somebody to take over in 4 or 5 years. But, I mean, interesting. Because, I mean, like you said, we all kind of expected him to be retired by this point. But he's still out there. He's still plugging away.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, there are worse ideas out there than trying to get, you know, have Ned Yost stick around and kind of mentor the younger set as they come up and hopefully get this organization back into a winning position. So, I can definitely agree with what you're saying where I can kind of see where they're coming from and if that's the case, you know, because it's your other cases you get into a – even though, you know, it's different with GM versus manager, but an Allard Baird type situation where, you know, I think if given a chance, or I should say a better chance, Allard Baird would have been a better GM, but he was in a very tough situation because, you know, I don't think many people would disagree that David Glass was a very different owner in terms of how he viewed the Royals and how he viewed baseball at the time. And, you know, we don't know exactly as much, but the impression we get from a lot of people around the organization in terms of, you know, who, you know, any of us have talked to or who we've, you know, just in interviews and such is that kind of part of the prerequisite for whether Dayton Moore would come to Kansas City was if David Glass would change his ways more or less. And he obviously did. And the Royals won a World Series. But my point is, you know, if Ned Yost was to retire now, or if the Royals were to fire him, they definitely wouldn't do that. But you know, if he were to retire now, then it's like, okay, they bring somebody in, and you know, how long are you? If the Royals had a new manager right now and he was 5-17, how happy do you think? Well, they never should have gotten rid of Ned. Never, Ned should have never retired. You know, right. I mean, that kind of a thing would be going around right now, and you'd have to wonder, you know, depending on how many years it takes for the Royals to get back into contention again, you know, How many years are you willing to accept from a manager in that scenario? And, you know, do the Royals want to have to hire somebody knowing that they likely have to fire him for that reason in a few years, and they have to hire somebody else and hope that that's the right decision for the crew of people that they had at the time? So now you can kind of, you know, still – I mean, Ned Yost gets to ride the coattails forever of winning a World Series because that's what happens when you win a World Series. So, yeah, you know, I mean, like I said, worst idea – there are worse ideas than having Ned try and kind of bridge the gap again to some possible time for contention for this organization. So, you know, we'll see what happens over the next couple of years and where Ned goes from here.
Yep. And they might all change their mind, or they might all just be talking. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Or maybe something happens and a miracle occurs and the Rose win another World Series. It's all on the tape.
Technically, it's all possible.
Technically, yes. But so with that, we'll talk about some on the field stuff that happened this week, with little there was of it,
just
little in the figurative sense, because there was a normal amount of baseball. But so kind of, I guess we'll first go over, Mike, you want to kind of give a rundown of the moves that have been made over the last week or so as Salvi's come back and some other roster massaging has occurred.
Yeah, so, I mean, Sal Perez and Alex Gordon both returned well ahead of what we figured was the schedule. Mm-hmm. Perez was not even like 4 weeks when it was going to be 4 to 6 weeks, and sure felt like it was going to be longer than that. So he's back. Cam Gallagher got optioned back to Omaha, which was the expected move. Not really an issue with that. With Alex Gordon's return, Paulo Orlando actually got the option. So he had started the year not hitting great, had committed a couple of errors in the outfield, and, you know, really just in general hasn't played that great. You know, hitting 191, not a guy who's going to walk, doesn't have any stolen bases. So, you know, when you consider that Abraham Almonte, who, you know, go crazy, has two homers, including a grand slam that won someone $25,000. He gets to stay. And, you know, for all the hemming and hawing I did about Abraham Almonte when the Royals picked him up, that's the right move. I mean, Paulo Orlando is 32. He hasn't played well since 2015, really. You know, I don't know what to do with him. He's certainly not someone that anybody expected to be much more than a fourth outfielder. So maybe he can kind of work on things in Omaha, come back and play better the rest of the season. But, you know, right now Almonte's playing better than he is. So it makes complete sense to do that. The other move that they made, they put Justin Grimm on the disabled list with a stiff back, which, okay.
Sure.
I'm sure it's not comfortable, but I think
otherwise known as a case of the sucks.
The 20 some ERA, which is kind of came, just kind of blew up. Like his first couple appearances, he looked pretty good, and then it just went way downhill, like off a cliff downhill. 9 walks in 7 innings, you know, 12 hits allowed, a whip of 3. That's not great. That's not what you're looking for. So, you know, he's on the disabled list. They called up Eric Stout, who is the 1-2-3rd pitcher to make his major league debut for the Royals, I think, this year, along with Brad Keller and Tim Hill. So,
in 23 games.
23 games, yeah. I remember in 2011.
22.
On opening day in 2011, the Royals brought out Aaron Crow, Nate Adcock, and Tim Collins, all making their major league debut. So,
not that's
unprecedented.
Right. No, it's not.
But yeah, Stout, you know, good lefty out of Omaha, so he'll be up for a bit. The Royals will need to make a move, probably on the 40-man roster, to accommodate Clay Buchholz, who, one, has an opt-out for May 1st, and two, the Royals have a doubleheader on Saturday. So they're probably going to want to use him for one of those. He threw 6.1 innings in Omaha on Sunday on 84 pitches. You know, the Royals really liked him in extended spring training. He's been good in both of his minor league rehab starts. I feel like they'll probably get through the weekend, and Eric Skoglund probably will get optioned probably on, you know, Sunday if things kind of go well for Buchholz. If that's the move they make, I assume it is, because it fits what they'll need. It fits his contract, and he's pitched well enough to get the look. So, you know, that seems to fit what the Royals will do. you know, other than that, I mean, those were kind of the moves. You know, Brandon Maurer's still in Omaha. He's been hit around a little bit down there too. So that's not great.
No.
While we were recording here, Jorge Soler hit his second homer of the year.
Boom.
Having a pretty, he's kind of, everybody on Royals Twitter seems to feel a breakout coming.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I haven't looked too deeply at this, but he walked earlier in the game, homered just a bit ago, and he's already coming into the game carrying he was starting the day at a 397 OPS, or not OPS, that'd be bad, on base percentage.
Yeah.
So the walk just adds another one. So he's leading the team in walks with 13, which might be a franchise record, frankly. Actually, it's his 14th
yeah.
walk. You know, he's walking about 18% of the time, which, you know, when he was acquired, that was kind of the thing, that he's got good plate discipline, he's got a good eye. And, you know, with the Cubs, his best walk rate was 11.7% back in 2016. He's got about 10% for his career. So, I mean, that's something that the Royals generally don't have. But to see him walking like he is, you know, it kind of shows me that he's got that approach that he talked about in spring training, and he's not chasing as much as we kind of expected him maybe to. He's still striking out a lot. He's got 19 strikeouts in what is now 75 plate appearances. So, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not like he's just mashing and making contact, but he looks pretty okay at the plate. You know, patient, disciplined. If the power is going to start to come now, that could be really fun. So, you know,
yeah.
Don't write him off just yet. He's doing some good things with the bat. He's one of two players on the Royals who has an OPS plus above 100. Moustakas being the other one. Everybody else is kind of all over the place. So
yeah.
He's been productive. And if it's just a sign of things to come, that could be encouraging, considering he's going to be around for another couple of years with the Royals.
You know, it seems like from, you know, I think when Soler was first acquired by the Cubs, it was, you know, he was thought to be someone who could be kind of an all-around hitter. But, you know, as he kind of developed, then I think it was more people thought maybe he'd be closer to one of those three true outcome type of guys, you know, because he did have good plate discipline, but also would hack a lot and had that kind of prodigious power. So he could end up being one of those types of guys that you might see hit, you know, that 225 to 250 range, but hit 30 home runs and have a 400 on base, which I'm totally fine with.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not that's not your an MVP type level season, but you know, that's really good. I would definitely take that for the next few years from Soler. So, you know, I don't know if that's what he's going to become. You know, I think that wasn't even necessarily a prediction. I think it was just a, hey, you know, his skill set is starting to develop this way that it could end up being like that. So, you know, it's good to see him kind of wake up a little bit. Good to see another home run from him. And he's on pace for over 100 walks, as you kind of alluded to, where it's been a long time since the almost 30 years. I think it was 1990 was the last time the Royals had somebody who had 100 walks in a season.
I don't even know. I just assumed they haven't done it, which I know they have, but I just don't remember it.
I'm pretty sure it was Kevin Seitzer. So I'm going to look that up really quick. But let's see. Kevin Seitzer had 102 walks in 1989.
Okay.
So that was the last time, I believe, that anyone. So yeah, almost exactly 30 years. And the Royals have a tradition of breaking records 30 years. So maybe we have to wait till next year to break through
maybe
that 30 years, but who knows. Soler is on pace right now, and it's pretty awesome to finally see, you know, the Royals have somebody that can work a count, can work a walk. I like to see it.
Yeah,
those types of things excite the baseball nerd within me.
Well, he seems to be in a 3-2 count all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he strikes out looking a lot. But, you know, he's also working a lot of pitches out of that starter. and walking and getting on base. And, like, I think I kind of looked at this. The Royals going into this game as a team have walked 8% of the time, which is kind of remarkable. I mean, it's 1 month, and perhaps it's a small
Royals
sample
organization.
Size. But just looking over the last 5 years, I jotted down what they've done. Last year, 6.5% of the time. The 3 years before that, 14, 15, and 16, they walked 6.3% of the time. 2013, they walked 6.9% of the time. And, you know, that's their high watermark. I didn't look any further back than that. But, I mean, as like historically, like you said, Seitzer with one season in 89 with 100 walks, they've never really had guys who walk a lot. I don't know if they've ever been above league average in walks, or if they have as a team, it's maybe even once or twice in 50 seasons. Like, even back into the late 70s, you know, even when they made the playoffs, you know, every other year pretty much, they just didn't walk that much. You know, and I guess if you're playing in old Royal Stadium, you want to try to, you know, hit it on that grass, you know, that turf, let it skid to the wall. So you don't really want to walk too much because, you know, a hit in the gap's a double every time. But I don't know. I mean, it's interesting to see that they're at 8% now. You know, a healthy Jorge Soler certainly helps that. Lucas Duda, John Jay, those guys are known for being able to draw a walk. But even guys like Chesser Cuthbert in a small sample size, he's walked almost 10% of the time. Alcides Escobar has 6 walks. You know, I mean, he's walking 7% of the time.
That's approaching
so
a season record for him.
I mean, we laugh, but it is. I mean,
it's actually not that far off.
He's not that far off. I think it's like 15, 16 maybe. I don't know. And like we're talking about walks, and it's like it's not that we want guys to walk because, ooh, it's money ball, it's on base percentage. It's just you want them to be patient so that they can get on base in another way that's not reliant on getting a ball to find a hole. And Soler's showing that you can be successful by being able to do that. You know, you're getting on base. You know, one way to think about it is what's their on base percentage and then subtract that from 1,000. And that's how often they're making an out, you know, so if they're 400 OBP, they make an out 60% of the time. Well, compare that to someone with a 300 OBP, they're making an out 10% more often. So, you know, the whole thing is outs. You know, you want to get guys on, but you want to also avoid outs. And, you know, walking is one way to do that. Being able to take a walk, being able to recognize where the control is bad, you can work the count, not chasing bad pitches. You know, those things can add up. And right now, the Royals, that's kind of the one thing they're doing kind of well, is just getting on base via the walk, even if nothing else is kind of working out.
Yeah, you know, and especially when you look at someone like Escobar, who, you know, he's never, even when he's had his good seasons hitting-wise, he's never been a big slugger. So, you know, not only just home runs, but doubles, triples, etc., he's not hitting a ton of those either. So if you're hitting mostly singles when you do hit it, then being a little bit more selective and allowing yourself to get on base without even needing to make contact, you know, you're ending up the same, because the majority of the time you're getting a single anyway. So, you know, the only thing you're losing is the possibility of getting more than a single by not making contact. But, you know, playing the odds, you're just about as well off as you were if you would have just, you know, made contact and ended up getting a single. So that's, you know, especially when you look at, you know, the types of hitters that they are and everything, there's definitely a lot of value there. So it's good to see the Royals kind of start picking that up a little bit. Like you said, it's only been a month, so who knows? You know, maybe they'll. I feel like the Royals have kind of done this before, not necessarily for this long, but just had a little few stints where we're like, hey, you know, their plate discipline's looking pretty good, and they'll go on stints where they won't walk for 2 weeks
right,
or something.
Exactly.
And just, so hopefully something like that never happens. But, you know, it's certainly good to see as of right now, to see the Royals kind of buck the trend a little bit of recent years and have a little bit better of a plate, a little bit more quality plate appearances from the whole team.
Yeah, I think it'll help because, I mean, right now they're not doing well with runners in scoring position. And I just double checked. Soler's home run today was with a runner on, which is only the sixth time they've hit a homer this year. They've got 19 homers this season. Six of them had a runner on. So that leaves 13 that were just solo shots. So if you can get guys on base and then start finding those doubles and homers, that's how you can score some runs. But until then, you know, yeah, I guess if they're going to walk, that's one part of it. So they got to get the other part now. If they can mix the two, I mean, with Perez and Gordon back, it seems like a much more stable lineup. You know, you don't have to have Chester Cuthbert batting fourth, which is really not something he should be doing. No. You don't have Ryan Goins batting sixth, which he did a couple of times, which is just crazy. It's gross.
Should not be a thing that occurs.
Shouldn't happen on a major league team. And, you know, now you can kind of extend it down and put some protection behind Mike Moustakas with Sal Perez batting behind him. You can basically go Moose, Sal, Duda, Soler, and end up, you know, with some guys who can hit the ball out and some guys who can set the table a little bit too. So, you know, on paper, it looks a lot better, you know, when you get everybody healthy, which should be obvious. So, you know, that's something good. So maybe those trends, maybe if they can get on base more and then hit a little bit better with runners in scoring position, they might be able to score some runs and kind of get some wins when the pitching shows up instead of ending up losing those games 3-2, 3-1, you know, 3-1, 2-1, 2-0, whatever bad games
whatever
they've
the
had,
case may be.
You know, just where, like, anytime you hold a team under four runs, you got a chance to win, and they just haven't been able to do that enough times. And that's all the offense. It's just, you know, when you've got guys who aren't as talented down the line, it's just, you're going to have troubles. And they've got guys who maybe are a little more effective at getting some of those runs in and you know, taking care of the right situations. So that's something to kind of keep an eye on. Walk rate, how they hit with runners on, runners in scoring position. And hopefully the walk rate continues and they can start hitting a little bit better.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of it for the prominent thing. Do we have any other more small things we wanted to hit on? I think that pretty much covers it.
Like, that's all I have in my notes.
So with that, I think we'll leave you here this night, morning, evening. Afternoon, wherever you're, whenever you're listening to the show, through the glory of podcasting, we'll definitely be back next week, having more. Again, I feel like a broken record in terms of my outros recently, because it's always hoping that we'll have better and more fun things to talk about, because it hasn't worked out yet.
No.
So, hopefully, so, you know, hopefully maybe Soler will wake up. At least if they're not going to win, at least give us more fun things like Jorge Soler having a possible breakout to talk about. So if he actually breaks out, that'd be really fun to talk about.
Yeah.
So we'll be back next week and talk more Royals. Before, if you get the hankering for any of that Royals, some sweet, sweet Royals action before next week when we're back, be sure to visit our sponsor, BP Kansas City, as well as head on in to Kelly's Westport Inn, because if you're going to watch the Royals lose, you might as well do it with some beers.
Yep.
And Kelly's is as good a place, if not better, than any to do that very thing. So be sure to visit our sponsors. We'll be back next week. Thank you all so much for listening. Couldn't do it without you. We love you all. We love the interaction. If you have anything else you want to yell at us for stupid opinions or whatever, please do so. Always love to hear from you. So thank you all so much for listening. We'll see you next week. Until then, thanks for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at BProKansasCity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.